Okay, so you had asked me to keep looking for strange contemporary topics, and until you give me a specific, I just keep looking. So I found one over the weekend. I figured the best way for me to look was just to look at, like, what other people have spoken about. So I found another one by Rabbi Josh Flug, where he put together a shiur about the following question, which I thought was interesting. In response to the creation of technology that focuses on designing computer brain interfaces that would allow the human brain to interact with computers, like Neuralink by Elon Musk, he wanted to deal with the theoretical question of what happens when we get to the point, if we get to the point, where we can integrate technology and the human mind so much that we can basically download information into our brain. What does that do to the mitzvah of Talmud Torah? I mean, what does that do to Talmud Torah if we no longer have, right? As it is, technology has made learning Torah significantly easier. Yeah. For sure, right? I think we'll talk about the questions we have to ask in a second. But let's just sort of frame it. But in general, right, technology has made the way in which we learn Torah completely different, right? It's made it much easier, right? You look in the medieval period, you'll find major Balei HaTosfot, who sometimes it's clear that they don't understand a sugya at all because they're trying to tease out the halachot based on the passage they have in one Gemara, and they just don't realize it exists in another Gemara because they didn't have that Masechet. They simply didn't have it. But you have this in, like, the Mari Bruna's discussions of Lashon Hara. He tries to derive all the halachic implications of Lashon Hara from a short parenthetical passage in Bava Batra, even though the extensive discussion is found in Erechin. And it's clear that he just didn't have Erechin. He didn't know it existed. And in general, right, a volume of a Talmud was extremely expensive. You didn't necessarily have it. Nowadays, right, like, last night I went online, and every few years they do this, like, major sale on the Bar-Ilan Responsa Project, that if you have any version of the Responsa Project from any time, right, most years they charge you by upgrade, right? So if you have, like, one from two or three times ago, right, they'll charge you X amount for each one. They'll charge you more, and if you're like three or four behind already, you just buy a new one. But every so often they do this sale where no matter what you have, they just upgrade you to the newest one for like one price, for like 350 shekel. So I bought my upgrade to 28 plus. Right now, presumably I have 95% of Torah at my fingertips on my little, on my little flash drive, which is obviously much easier than anything's ever been. There was an article a few weeks ago on the Lair House. The Lair House? It's like an online popularized academic Jewish website. No. Anyways. So they had an article there by professors Moshe Kapel and Avi Schmidman about the futures of technology in Talmud Torah. Predictions that using artificial intelligence, they think it's possible that they could create something like the Encyclopedia Talmudit without the encyclopedia, without a person, right? Basically, the computer could predict all the relevant sources and compile them for you and different things. And then they focus on other things, vocalization and, plus translation. The nature of Talmud Torah has radically changed. And there are implications to that halachically and hashkafically. Right? Halachically, for example, already most people attribute this to the Lecha Mishnah. It does appear in the Lecha Mishnah, but it appears earlier in the Ri Balei HaTosfot quoted the Smach Miturich and Zimin Kuf Yud Aleph. That there's a prohibition to paskin halacha in front of your Rebbe, but the already in the time of the Balei HaTosfot, they started saying, well, maybe that was before we had books, but now that we have books, the books are rabbeim, and therefore
don't paskin in front of your book.
Well, you get both sides, right? One is maybe you're allowed to paskin in front of your personal human teacher because your primary source of knowledge was book knowledge. And the flip side, which comes up later in the Achronim, which is, and it's irresponsible for anybody to paskin before you check the books because it's so easy just to access the books. So it democratizes information. It creates an expectation of access or of research that, you know, can't be expected. We don't have access to information. And there, like I said, there are many, many implications on halacha of technology on Torah. But Rav Flug wanted to put together these sources on, you know, taking it to a much sort of, as he said, at the moment, what is science fiction, but there's no particular assumption this will remain in science fiction. At some point I saw a quote by some scientist, I don't remember who it was, right, that older generations took Star Trek as science fiction and we take it as an instruction manual, right, or something like that. Star Trek's not really my time either, but meaning all the things that were sci-fi, you know, 20 years ago are reality. So who knows what will be true in 20 years. I remember when, were you too young to know, remember like the kids movie Spy Kids?
No.
Okay. So you're like in the first one, the cutting edge technology that they had was phones that you could have a video conference on, right? That you could talk to people with a video. This was like the cutting edge, and now it's like, you know.
And another one was like really small cameras.
Yeah, exactly. Like all those things.
Yeah, but also in a lot of ways, technology has developed in ways that we didn't think it was going to. Like if you looked at all of the 80s movies about this time period, they all thought we were going to have a
flying cars
revolution in energy. But we haven't had that. But we've had a revolution in innovation.
Correct.
So
right. So there's been a lot of
hoping she'll get married. I'm still working on
that. So he wanted to deal with this futuristic question, right? Which is what happens if we can get to the point where we can download information directly into our brain. So, well, now, you're right that there's a difference between analysis and simply reading. But what does this do to Talmud Torah? And I think the questions we need to ask are, well, what exactly is the nature of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah such that this would change it? Right? Meaning, part of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah is analysis, and then we'd have to figure out how this would affect analysis. Part of it is also knowing things, but we might have to ask: is knowing things is this a result-oriented mitzvah? Right, like by the end of your life, you have to know everything, or is it predicated on human effort? Right, like you have to be involved in Torah up to and in, you know, until the point when you cover all of Torah. But it's, you know, if you were trying your whole life but you never get there, then you're yotzei the mitzvah. But if you never tried and you just got to that result because down in your brain you would not fulfill the mitzvah, is there a benefit to it? Would we say you dafka should not do it because we value the effort, right? That type of question is what you have to ask. And what I thought was interesting by the way you put it together is that there is no obvious place that you look for this. What you need to do is sort of go back to first principles and say, what is the nature of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah? And then sort of work your way backwards and figure out how would this have implications on this type of technology. But obviously there's no siman in Shulchan Aruch of if you could download Torah into your brain, what would that do? But the sources that he brings are relatively straightforward sources because the real sources are about the nature of Talmud Torah, right? We then have to tease out the implications for this type of theoretical technology. So I thought it'd be an interesting thought experiment to follow this through. So let's take a few minutes to look at some of these sources, and as you go through them, think about it, right? What are the implications? Or even, you know, actually, before we look at the sources, what do you think? Right? Before we look at the sources, let's take just a few minutes to brainstorm. What do you think? Should you not? Do you have to? Are you not allowed to? Right? Download it into your brain. Would you fulfill Talmud Torah? Would you not? Yeah.
I feel like it's going to do like
obligated to, and it's usher to type of thing.
But what would it be based on?
The fact that, like, whether you believe that, like, knowledge is, like, the ultimate goal type of thing, or if, like, the acquisition and, like, the journey is more important in, like,
right, and I think that's fundamentally going to be the question that it comes down to, right, is how much you think Talmud Torah is process-oriented and result-oriented, right? And I think that's definitely sort of the meta question you have to ask to deal with it. Yeah?
I don't think, I mean, from my standpoint now, I don't think the goal of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah is to know stuff. I think it's to be involved with the process of understanding stuff, and therefore, even if you have all the information in the world, if you still want to understand something, you have to ask a question, and then you have to find all these random sources.
Let me just tease it out, because you're making two claims, right? One is the process matters.
Yeah.
The second is there's two ways you could formulate this. One is the very act of engagement with the sources is what matters, rather than simply knowing them. The second is knowledge is not what matters, but analysis matters, and you can't download analysis.
Yeah.
Right? Those are two different claims. Right? Because one is saying that it's the process itself which is important. The other is saying, no, the result is important. It's just this is not going to give you the result. Those are two different claims. Right? They might both be true. I'm just saying those are two claims, not different.
Yeah,
they're different.
I think both the process and the analysis are important. So I think that having all the information in your brain is fairly similar to like having Safaria or the Bardimon project.
Possibly.
It's just easier to access.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at it the same way, that it's not like I see it as like having very easy access to sources. Like you could search a database that's like whatever inside your brain, but that doesn't mean that you necessarily understand anything that you see there. Or even like say it's like, I don't know, like a hard Gemara, or even that you can like read what it says and understand it. Just because it's there doesn't mean that you know it.
Right. Now, this is theoretical technology, so I don't know what it would mean, right? Is it that, like, you have a chip in your brain that you can then run a search, you just have to go to your computer, or is it that you do somehow, right, know it? I don't know. Again, this is all theoretical. We're talking a theoretical question.
Yeah.
Would there be a distinction between those two? Maybe. Yeah.
I was just going to say, like, I agree with Ruthie, like, in the sense that, like, there's like a process that needs to be learned in order to develop halacha. And there's like when we have all these classes, like even used to do, like we're talking about like different ways of learning the text, which you would never get from downloading it into your brain because that's always changing and because of different styles and different methodologies. Even if it was written out, like you still wouldn't get it until you did it. That's why you have like people who like don't know, let's do it like a rabbi, like because you're not just looking at the sources because you have the sources. You're going through this logic and you're learning how to like paskin halacha or like to do make a drasha based on that process. And in order to develop halacha, in order to keep the Judaic canon moving, I guess you have to learn that.
You're good. Okay, so let's take a few minutes and look at some of these sources. And try to get through the first few, I guess. And then we'll come back and sort of talk about what we think the implications are. I mean, we have some intuitions, but let's try to flesh them out in sources. So as we've already highlighted, this one of the central factors to answering this question is going to be examining how much of Talmud Torah is about the process of learning and how much of it is about is about knowing the Torah. So, the starting point is, or at least one of the starting points, is the following Gemara in Menachot. The Gemara in Menachot tells us as follows. It starts in a completely different context, and it talks about how one replaces the Lechem Hapanim on the Shulchan. Rabbi Yossi Omer, afilu silek ad yishana shachar v'sider ad hachadasha, arvit ein bekach klum. The lechem apanim, the bread on the shulchan, is supposed to be there, tamid. And Rabbi Yossi said, what does tamid mean? He says, even if you take the old one off in the morning and put the new one in the evening, that doesn't violate the principle of tamid. When it says you have to have bread on the shulchan tamid, that only means that you can't go a whole day, you can't go a night without having the bread there. Now, very quickly, what is the basis for his argument? Right, how could you say that the bread needs to be on the...
Like a karban tamid?
Right, well right now it's talking about the lechem apanim, but we'll come back to the karban tamid in a second. How could you say that it's tamid, but it doesn't need to be there all the time? Just like the karban tamid.
Yeah.
So how could you say that?
You're not bringing all the time.
Yeah, okay, but that only exacerbates the problem. So what does tamid mean?
It means like regular.
It's consistent.
Regular.
Good, or as Rulof Hamsin once put it, it's very simple. It's, there are two understandings. If you want alliteration,
or continuous.
Sometimes tamid means constant, sometimes it means consistent. Right? So Rabbi Yossi said it means, by lashon habanim, consistent. Meaning, you can't go a day without it. But it doesn't have to be there all the time. Same as the lechem, the karban hatamid, which clearly is once in the morning, once in the afternoon, but it's not all the time. It's not constant, it's just regular. It's consistent.
So like expectation.
What?
So like an expectation that it's there.
That it's there on a regular basis, right? So I bring it always. What does always mean? Once a day.
Right, but right. You would expect it to be there as opposed
meaning
to
consistent.
It have to be like...
Right, meaning it follows a regular pattern, but it doesn't have to be there. Right, tamid can mean either. So Rabbi Yossi says that it means consistent. And Amar Rav Ami, but then Rav Ami makes an implication. He says, Midvarav shel Rabbi Yossi, nilmod afil lo shana adam ela perek echad shachredu perek echad arvid ki yei mitzvah lo yamish sefer atorah azemi picha. And he said, what's true of the what's true of the lechem is true of Talmud Torah, namely Talmud Torah is a consistent, not a constant obligation at its minimum, right? Its minimum is consistent, and therefore you fulfill your obligation of not having the Torah abandoned from your mouth, I guess, as long as you learn a single chapter in the morning and a single chapter at night. And Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai Afil Lo Karadam El Kriyat Shema Shachrit Varvit Kiyim Lo Yamush. And then Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said, even if what you learned in the morning and at night was saying Shema, that would be enough. You would not violate the prohibition of having abandoned the Torah. The problem is that the Gemara in Brachot, Lamed Hei, records a dispute between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai as follows. Tan Rabbanan Vasafta Degonecha, Ma Talmud Lomar. You have to gather your grain, meaning you have to work. So Lefi Shenemar, why do you have to tell us that? Lefi Shenemar, Lo Yimush Sefer HaTorah, Zemi Picha, Yachol Dvarim Kiktavan, Talmud Lomar Vasafta Degonecha, Hanheg Bohen Minech Der Eretz Sefer Rabbi Yishmael. See, then why do you have to say this? Because you might have thought I have to learn all the time. So if I have to learn all the time, when am I ever going to work? So the Pasuk tells you, no, you have to work. From which you know that you have to learn at normal times, but you're allowed to work also. Right? You balance your life. And Rishon Bar Yochai says, no. If people are working, right, they're plowing it, plowing season, planting it, planting season, winnowing it, winnowing season, etc. Torah Mateela. When are you ever going to learn Torah? So Allah, Bisman Israel, Sinris Anosha Makom, if the Jews follow God's will, Malachana said, so then their work will be done by others. Shinamar Ramdu Zarim Zarut Sonchem the Vigomer. Bisman Israel Sinrit Sanosha Makom Lachin Nasid Ali Deatsman. And if they don't follow God, they have to work. Meaning it's a curse. Shinamar Vasafta Deganecha Vlood El Shamachim Nasid Ayadan Shinamar Vavato et Oivecha. So there seems to be, as many have pointed out, a contradiction, because Rav Shimon Bar Yochai in Minachot says that you fulfill your obligation even by saying Shema in the morning and Shema in the evening. And yet in Brachot, he says that how often do you have to learn? All the time, always, and not work. Right, so which does he mean? So there are many different directions that can be taken here. Some say that you have to divide between obligation and aspiration. Right? I mean, the obligation to learn Torah is minimal. The aspiration is maximal. And there are all different types of ways of formulating it. But one of the most sort of formal approaches is this by the Shulchan Aruch Harav. Now, who is the Shulchan Aruch Harav? It's not the same person as Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch is Rabbi Yosef Karo, right, in the writing in the 1500s. Shulchan Aruch Harav, who's the Rav? In this case? What? No, not in this case. It's the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, right, the Balatanya, Rishner Zalman of Liadi. And this is what he says. He says there are two mitzvot, or two aspects to the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. If you look here, he notes the contradiction, and he says, like five lines down. Umiuzeu dochak tzat lomar de rashbida amar stam afil lo karele kriyetshma mairi davka dumya de ben doma shalomat kola Torah. Right, how is it that the Rishon Bar Yochai said you only have to read once in the evening, once in the night? Right, he can't be referring only to someone who already knows the whole Torah. Ela mairi bistam kola bnei adam. D'lav barachi uliyo talmid chacham kidita be'edja kibibidrash tilim, etc. Because not everyone knows the whole Torah already. So he says, I'm skipping now. Now he introduces the following theory, that there are two mitzvot of Talmud Torah. One is, this is only part of the passage, but one is what he calls Yidiyat HaTorah, right? Knowledge of the whole Torah, all of it, which in his footnote he thinks is, if I remember correctly, Tanakh, Mishnah, Tosefta, Bavli, Yerushalmi, Midrash, Halacha, which itself includes the Sifrei, Sifra, and the multiple Mechiltas, Midrash, Agadah, and I think in some versions, maybe Rambam and Shulchan Aruch as well, right? A nice short list. But everyone is obligated to know Kol HaTorah Kula. And in addition, there's the mitzvah of Limud HaTorah. Right? Limud HaTorah. Now, he argues that when Rishon Bar Yochai is talking about it's enough to learn a little bit in the morning and the evening, he means this, to fulfill Limud Torah. But there's also an obligation of Yediyat HaTorah. Now, in this piece, he suggests that someone who's incapable of knowing Kol HaTorah Kula, so then he focuses on Limud, and that's what Rishon Bar Yochai is saying. Someone who could know Kol HaTorah Kula, he has to learn all the time to make sure he knows all of it. If you're never going to reach that anyways, so then let's just focus on how much you have to learn. How much you have to learn. And that's what he thinks that's the way you resolve the contradiction. Now, even if you don't think that resolves the contradiction, the point is he introduces these two mitzvot, right? There's two aspects to the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Now, he uses this to explain as well why in the simple understanding of the Gemara in Moed Katan is that Talmud Torah does not, while most mitzvot have a rule, ha'osek b'mitzvah patur min ha'mitzvah, right, that if you're involved in one mitzvah, you don't have to do another. The Gemara says not true of Talmud Torah, because that really wouldn't make sense, right? You would never, end up doing anything else. But on the other hand, the Rambam rules that it's legitimate to push off when you get married to learn, because ha'osik b'mitzvah patur min ha'mitzvah v'kol shekein Talmud Torah. So he argues that it depends. if someone is on their path to learning all of the Torah, they're allowed to say, look, I'm going to be finished by the time I'm 25. I'll think about getting married after I know Kol HaTorah Kula. Right? That's legitimate. But to say, I'm never going to get married because I always want to be learning, right? That's crazy because you constantly have to be learning. Right? There's not a quantifiable end. If you want to say, when I finish this quantifiable, very small, little...
Tiny.
Well, you haven't finished this already. Right?
No.
It's nothing.
To be fair, I wasn't allowed to learn it most of my life. So.
None of it. Tanakh,
and that's it.
So. Yeah. I haven't crossed so many of this off my list yet. I mean, I've learned Tanakh, and I've learned the Bavli. And I'm, you know, probably, no, not so sefta. Yerushalmi I'm going through now so that I can check that off my list. Okay. It's like, I saw on Facebook, I was like, you know, Rav Yoni Rosenzweig and I had the same idea. And when Daf Yomi started again, we both started Yerushalmi on the same day. He posted it at some point. I don't think I've ever met him, but I was like, we don't teach at the same time, you know. Anyways. What?
Guy, you should talk to.
We've now been texting a little bit. They asked him to come speak at Migdal at some point.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, crossing worlds, you know. Totally. What does he teach here, brother?
Gender and halacha and methodology.
Okay. You know, I really should get around to meeting him because, like, I know he likes halachic methodology, which is like my minor obsession. So.
Your doctorate.
What?
Your doctorate.
Yes. You know, my father was listening to this shiur on Wayu Torah, and he's like, what, you're starting a doctorate? You didn't tell me? I'm like, I didn't say that. I said, if, you know. Okay. So. What? Yeah. So what would you say? Right, so now we've outlined two aspects to Talmud Torah. So what would you tell me, based on this? If you could download the Torah into your brain, so what would you say? Would it help you for this?
It would help you
for Limud? Not at all.
No,
right? We could talk about maybe, right? Maybe it would help you with this, right? Meaning if I could download all the basic information in my head, maybe it would accomplish.
Not necessarily.
Maybe, right? Meaning it definitely doesn't help you here, where this is about the process. But we said that this might depend on process versus result. Limud is clearly process. I must learn every day, right?
But wait, why isn't Yediyat Torah just the result, like knowing it?
So Yediyat Torah, potentially, Limud, no.
Yeah.
Right, so that's what I'm saying. So this, clearly, even if I knew Kol HaTorah Kula, even old-fashioned way, I was Rav Avadia Yosef, I just knew everything, right? Everything about everything, every, you know, at any time, anywhere. So then I still have to learn, right? You still have to learn. There may just be nothing left for you to know, right? This he definitely knew. Right? What else he knew, I don't know. But this he definitely knew. And, you know, a lot more. I remember when his son came to speak, they did a memorial event in Gush at some point, and Rav Yitzchak Yosef came to give like a shiur in honor of his father, and they took him on a tour of the library in Gush, which at the time had, I think, 80,000 volumes. Now it probably has, you know, more than that. This was a while ago. And he's like, I just saw your library. It was so nice. 80,000 volumes. But I want you to know that when my father passed away, we counted his personal library. And it had half that. He had 40,000 volumes in his library, which he read all of them. which I know, like people would go in, there'd be notes. And like, Ray Bednar said he once went and he found like random books published by Gush that were in his library, and he opened it up, and Rav Avadia had written notes already on the side. So, like, he had read, you know. So, like, he really did know everything. I know. I can't even. My brain just doesn't even compute.
How does he have time for all of
that? I don't know. I really. When you find out the secret, let me know. You know. And I speed read, and I still can't, you know, process it. Like, you know.
I can't process stuff if I.
Oh, no, my students were testing me because I was like, oh, I speed read. And then they were like, oh, here's a test on speed reading, like these online speed reading tests. Like you press start when you start reading and stop when you finish reading. And then you take a comprehension test, right? And like the top percentage are people who can read like 1,000 words a minute and with about 85% comprehension rate. So they were trying to see if I, you know, got to that.
If I really want to, like,
yes. Yes, I could read about, yeah, according to the thing I read, like 1,100 words a minute with 80-something percent comprehension.
Like maybe 500.
And still I cannot. I have no idea how to fathom that.
I can read, and then if you give me a test right after, like, I could take that test and do well. But then if I really wanted to, like,
know it,
put it in.
Yeah. I know, it's one of those, speed reading is just a skill that you pick up. But still, even with speed reading, I don't know how you read that much. And remember it.
Yeah, I literally can't do that.
How do you learn how to speed read?
Go online. They have all types of ways of teaching yourself.
But if you hold it farther away from your face, it's easier to read.
So yeah, different things. I mean, the number one way, which I've never actually done, I had a chavrusa who did this, is to train your brain to not read in your head while you're going through it. Right? What slows you down is that you artificially read it, so like there are ways of training your brain not to do that.
And then how do you hear the word?
You don't. I don't know. I've never. Anyways, not important. Really. Okay. So potentially, though, we have two aspects of Talmud Torah. One of the aspects clearly isn't going to help you. The limud. The question is about Yediyat Torah. Does it help you? So at some level, you might say, I think you have to divide the question. One, is there a value? The second is, did you fulfill a mitzvah? So, I don't know. Is there a value to knowing Kol HaTorah Kula? Presumably, right? Is it the mitzvah? I don't know. I think we need to now push it farther and say, well, what's the benefit, even in knowing Torah and mastering Torah, what is the value of putting in effort to get to that result? Right? Meaning the Shulchan Aruch couldn't have imagined this particular eventuality. So if you look in the next piece, this is from Rabbi Shaul Shalanter. He writes, he also thinks there's a second aspect, which is not knowing Torah. Now his source is the Gemara on number 6. Number 5. That the Gemara says, Vishinantem. What does Vishinantem mean? Vishinantem levanecha. Literally, it means it should be sharp. So he says, Al tikri. Vishinantem ela vishilashtem laola mishalesh adam shmotav shlish b'mikra shlish b'mishna shlish b'talmud mi yada kamachayot chichel yomei. So first of all, you have to divide up your Torah learning. You have to divide up your Torah learning into thirds. The Gemara has a bit of a deal of what that means. There's a second line there. I'm actually surprised he didn't put this. The next line is really the key there. The Gemara then continues, Vishinantem shehu divrei Torah mechudadim b'ficha, that the Torah should be sharp in your mouth, shem yishach lecha adam davar al tzarich legamgem ela omer lo miyad, that if someone asks you the Torah, you don't have to stutter, you'll say it immediately. Right? Which the Ran in Nedarim Dav Chet understands as an obligation to know the Torah. Right, to know the Torah. The Rebbe Yatzev has a tshuva about this as well. I remember once when I was in, I mentioned this to you, or I definitely mentioned to my students at Migdal, that Rav Lichtenstein once got very annoyed because people hadn't prepared enough for Shir. So he said, right, Katuv Bagmara Vishinantem, Shudivri Torah Mechudadim Beficha Shemshach Alchadam Davar Vechulei. Right, you have to know the Torah well enough that if someone asks you a question, you don't have to stutter. Vatem. Atem afilu hitchaltem legamgem. Right?
Yeah.
Right. You haven't even started to stutter. Right? Right? You need to... But there is this obligation to know it. To know it at the tip of your tongue. So the Ori Yisrael writes this. And he says... And he quotes other ones. And he says, Yisora mitzvah azot kolal shnei pradim. Part of this is that you get bikiyut, just basic proficiency in all of Torah. Shiyut Talmudo kneged shagur b'fiv, and shtayim lo yecholet l'tchakem b'Torah l'chadei daseichel, etc. The second is analysis, right? So he says there's two, even within what you have to know. Right, there are two things. One is knowledge, and the other is you have a mitzvah to analyze. And again, as several people mentioned, maybe there would be a benefit to knowing all of the downloading the information. Maybe it would solve the problem of knowledge. But it would presumably not take away the secondary obligation to analyze and assess. Yeah.
So, I don't see how that could be a bad thing then, because then you've already accomplished part one, and then you can analyze it once you have it on.
Good. So far what we've seen is, according to all these sources, it would not be... Maybe it would not be a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Yediyat HaTorah, because you didn't do anything. But it wouldn't be a bad thing, because it would leave you with the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, and leave it with the mitzvah of analysis, and it would just give you more information to work with. So what type of source would you have to look for if you thought that not only did this not maybe fulfill a mitzvah, which maybe it does, maybe it doesn't, there's no masa mitzvah, right? There's no formal performance, fine. But where would you have to look to see whether it was a good idea to do this? Well, what do you think? I'll jump through the sources as you find them relevant. What do you think? What do you need? What type of source do you need to look for to answer that question? Right? Because so far, all we've done is isolate the different aspects. And so far, if I just had this, I would say, look, it clearly won't exempt you from learning, because you still need to analyze. You still have a daily mitzvah to learn, regardless of how much you know and how much you've analyzed. But so far, have we seen any sources which say it's a bad thing? No, it's just insufficient. Is there a reason why it might be something you'd want to avoid, and not just something that is not enough to fulfill a mitzvah? What type of source would you have to look for? Which would say what?
That really what you should be doing is not, I don't know,
no, I know what you're saying, but let's right, what do you need?
You need someone who's going to try and tell you the right way to live your life.
That's going to tell you what?
The source is going to be trying to tell you the right way to live your life.
Meaning what you're going to need is a source that's going to tell you that not just that there's a mitzvah to put in effort and learn, but that the only value comes from that which you get through effort, right? None of this, what we've seen so far, tells you that there's no value to just knowing things. It just tells you that's not enough. That's fine, yeah.
Can't we compare, this technology that, you're uploading all the Torah to your brain to any other, sources or methods in Jewish learning that have made it easier to acquire Torah, or, new technology? So, the printing press, for example.
Good, so that's what I said at the beginning, is that at one level, you could say this is just another step along the process of things that make it easier, like the printing press, internet, the responsive project.
Or even, the Mishnah Torah, it took these ideas that were hard for people to, find, and it compiled them so it was easy to read, so, everyone could have access to it. If anything, it democratizes Judaism.
Good. So what type of source, though, would weigh in on this question directly?
Sources that are more traditional and that don't want you to change the way
you're learning. I don't know if it's more traditional, but what are they looking for? Right, sources that value what? Effort, thank you. That's the word, right? You need a source that's going to say, without effort, this is not just not enough, but meaningless. Right, so where are you going to look for that? Right? Where do you even look? Now, you're right. Some of them are going to be Musari sources, but, okay, think. Are there any sources that you can think of that might be relevant?
Telling you.
Yeah, can you think of any? There's at least one very famous Agadic passage that needs to be at least mentioned. It's Agadic, but it needs to be mentioned.
The one from the Mishnah?
Not in the Mishnah. It's a Gemara.
Oh, the angel that put finger in.
The Gemara says that every person learns. Yeah, that's a Gemara.
In utero.
In utero, yeah. Right? That the Malach teaches you all of the Torah in utero, and then you forget it.
Yeah.
Right? Well, yeah, that's why I did this, right? That's, this, I don't know what this is, but I don't know where that came from. But the Gemara does exist. By the way, it's not unique to Jews. Jews weren't the only people who believed this, right? The Greeks also believe this, right? Meaning Socrates talks about this. the right, that all learning is really recalling.
Do you think that that it's in the Talmud because they knew about the Greek ideal?
Meaning, I think, look, there are different possibilities. Either this is a widely accepted view in the ancient world, and they all mean it literally, right? Could be. I tend not to think that. I tend to think, Soloveitchik used to talk about this one, and he said, as I've heard it, right, that the point of it was to emphasize, the point of the Agadah is not that you actually knew Kol HaTorah Kula, but as much to emphasize the fact that Torah learning, you should view it as something natural, right? Something that's already inherent. I focus more personally on the difference between the Greek version and the Jewish version, because in the Jewish version, in the Greek version, all knowledge is innate, right, within the human being. In the Jewish version, all knowledge is divinely communicated. So even though the end result is both of them are forgotten, right, it has there's a different theology there of knowledge, right, which is knowledge contained within the human being, or is all knowledge shared from the divine? My feeling is that the Jewish one is really a response to this belief in the ancient world that maybe human beings contain all knowledge, and is saying even if you contain the infinite possibility for knowledge, right, it's because you're sharing divine knowledge, and that's really the crux. That's my personal feeling on it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But anyway, you have to bring that into conversation. Right, and I'll tell a story, even though, it's a story I've heard several times from Rabbi Brander about the Rav, though I know that some members of the Rav's family have heard the story enough times and they don't like hearing it more.
They're not here.
But he said that when his oldest son was born, so one of the opinions for why you have a Shalom Zachar right, on Friday night after a baby boy is born is because, and the reason that you have round foods there, right, that's one of the menhagim, is to mourn the fact that the baby forgot his Torah. That's why we have chickpeas, right, that's where the menhag comes from. Yes, there's an old minhag to have chickpeas at the Shalom Zachar, and one of the reasons given is because round foods are signs of mourning, and you're mourning the fact that the child has forgotten his Torah, and therefore you're coming and comforting him.
Wait,
and what? Yes. Yes, because there's no peh, because there's no mouth, right? And when you're in mourning, it's like you have nothing to say. That's the imagery.
Don't we have the Shalom Zachar if it's a boy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Hold that thought. Hold that thought, and I'll tell you a story.
Yeah, okay.
Anyways, so Rabbi Brander said when he got married, he asked the Rav was Masada Kedushin for him, and he asked him for advice, or like last minute words of wisdom. And he apparently, and as he said, he told him, "Don't have chickpeas at the Shalom Zachar." That was his advice, which Rabbi Brander said he took as it's not something to mourn that you forgot the Torah, because it's not something to celebrate to be given the Torah on a right on a silver platter. The effort is something that's worth celebrating, and therefore it's not a bad thing to have forgotten the Talmud Torah. Right? That's the story he tells, which again emphasizes the notion of effort. So now ask your question, and I'll answer with the story.
Why isn't there one for girls?
Oh, good. Why isn't there one for girls? So. I remember once that I was at a Shalom Zachar in Washington Heights with my wife when we, a few weeks before we moved to Israel, and when we came into the Shalom Zachar, so there were a few guys from YU having an argument about this, and they were talking about the different reasons given for a Shalom Zachar. And why it's not for the minhag didn't develop for a girl, and at some point one of the people in the conversation said, "Wait a second, what do girls do while they're in the womb?" Yes, this was an actual conversation. Aura and I both basically had that look on our face. Okay. So they start arguing about what exactly girls are doing in the womb, which is already when you're in like the realm of a god. Anyways, after like a few minutes of this argument going on, Rabbi and Rebbetzin Schechter walk into the Shalom Zachar. And they look at Rav Schechter, and they say, oh great, Rav Schechter's here, we can ask Rav Schechter. Rebbe, what do girls do in the womb? And he said, they learn Torah. And they said, but what do you mean? They're not obligated in Talmud Torah. And he said, what do you mean? Everyone agrees they have to learn Torah that's relevant to them. They're learning Torah. And they started giving him lumdus, but maybe it's not a din Talmud Torah. It's a din in Hechsher Mitzvah. It's a Beis HaLevi. And he's like, but anyways, and Rav Schechter's like, I don't understand. They have to learn Torah. They were learning Torah. So then they're like, but Rebbe, if women are learning Torah in the womb, then shouldn't you have a shalom? But he stops for a second. He says, you're right. I think you should. And that was the end of the conversation. They were all like dumbstruck, at which point Ora and I decided that if we ever have a girl, which, you know, three boys in, right? We'll see, right? We will do a shalom bat and say, well, this is not like some liberal thing. This is what Rav Schechter said. I heard it with my own 2 ears, right? He said that you should have one. Rav Schechter is like, one of the things I love most about Rav Schechter is the fact that he is totally not afraid that, like, if someone just, you know, if he comes up with a lumdus and it makes sense, then he'll just be like, oh, yeah, that's what it should be. Oh, people don't do it? Okay, so they're wrong, right? Now, if you ask him a different time, he might say something else, but he'll put his name behind a theoretical structure if it makes sense. I cannot attest to the fact that he would do this lemaisa. I just know that in this conversation, in that apartment in 142 Laurel Hill, right, this is what Rav Schechter said. And that I intend on doing this to make a point.
But why is part of their argument that, like, they're only learning what they're supposed to. That doesn't make
really
sense.
You're asking me Akasha on this, really?
Yes.
This wasn't like a sugya I found that I have to justify. This was like a conversation at a Shalom Zachar in Washington Heights when I was 25. You know, 20,
okay,
whatever.
I don't understand their point. Like,
it was a very formal point. It was maybe it's the Beis HaLevi says that maybe even within the Chiyuv Talmud Torah for women, it's defined as a part of the mitzvah, right, as a hechsher mitzvah for the mitzvah they're going to do because of the Talmud Torah rather than as an independent standalone mitzvah of Talmud Torah. And they were, anyways, it was a very lumdish argument, which the point of that whole thing, right, was that, right, the sort of agadic traditions that have emerged around this, the tradition that says you mourn the loss of Torah seems to say that in an ideal world, there is a value to knowing everything, and losing that information, even if you got it with no effort, is something bad. And therefore, presumably, being granted to you on a silver platter is a good thing. Right? Again, maybe not a fulfillment of the mitzvah, but at least a good thing. On the other hand, this story from Rabbi Brender, of, right, the Rav's approach to that midrash, so to speak, typifies a approach that says that we don't like that. We actively don't want to be granted things easily. The process is what makes even the knowledge valuable.
So why do we even have Zohar in the first place?
Well, that's why. So there are other reasons. There are much less sort of mystical, agadic reasons. There are reasons like it gives the woman an opportunity to say Birchat HaGomel with a minion.
Ah, okay.
Right, things like that. Which in Yerushalayim, there are certain, Rav Shlomo Zalman records that in certain places in Yerushalayim, that was the minhag, right? That you said HaGomel then, even though most... There are other reasons that are given. I mean, that's just one of many reasons, right, that are given. It's one of those minhagim, who knows, right? Look, for my oldest son, I had a Shalom Zachar. Right, for my second son, I didn't because we were still in the hospital. So, like, Shalom Zachar was like us and the, you know, there were like three couples in the hospital wing, and like one of our friends had come on Erev Shabbos and brought brownies. That was the Shalom Zachar, right? And like my third son, we had it, but it was crazy because it was Shabbos Hagadol, and like who wants everyone coming to their house with chametz? Like it's a, you know.
a logistical nightmare.
It is, especially when you're a rabbi in a community and you know people are going to show up, right? Like, so, whatever. Right, Yerchina is a tzaddik, and he hosted it in his house, which, okay. So let's skip for a moment, since this is what we've been talking about, skip for a moment to 23. Right, this is the Gemara that I was mentioning. Umilamdin oto et kolat rakula shne'amar v'yoreni v'yomer li נתמוך דברי לכך שמור מצוותי, וחיי, ואומר, בסוד אלוה... yeah, this, wow, it is, this printer is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's not the font size. Unbelievably amazing.
Anyways, so he learns Kol HaTorah there, v'kevan shebal aviyar olam, piv, and then when he's about to be born, the malach hits him on the face, right? This particular, meaning the fact that the malach hits you in the face and you forget it, that's in this agadata, right? The fact that, like, this thing comes because of that, that's not in the agadata, and he forgets it. What?
Really hard slap.
Yes, yes, amnesia for the rest of your life.
Oh, great.
And we've already sort of mentioned the two approaches you could take on this, but if you look at the next source... look at the next two sources. One is by the Gra, and one is about the Gra. So the Gra writes in his Parashan Mishle, Nefesh Amel, Im Lamad Torah Be'al Tachzik Tova Las Mecha Ki L'Kach Notzarta. If you've learned a lot of Torah, don't right, be haughty because of it. Right, don't feel proud. For that's why you were created. And that's why, right, when you learn all of the Torah in utero, that's what it means, right? Like, you were created to do this, because you already did it. So, right, the point of this statement is basically to tell you that it's easier to remember that or to find that which you once had. Right? So that's why the Gemara describes Torah as a mitziah, something you find. Right, because the main point of it, or at least the second point here, which basically says there are two purposes to this. One is that your actions need to exceed what you've learned, right? And since you've learned Kol HaTorah Kula, right, that sets the bar really hard of what you're supposed to do, right? Let's start again. The Gra basically clearly understands this agadically, right? And he says the point, what it's teaching you is two points. One is that since you always demand of yourself more action than what you've learned, if in theory you've learned everything, that means that the sky's the limit of what your responsibilities are in this world, because you are in potential you've learned everything. The other is that it makes it easier to learn because you believe that basically it's inside of you. Right? This, which is the same point Socrates makes about the theory of recollection, right? That it's easier to learn because fundamentally it's recollection. Now the Gra's brother wrote this next sefer, Ma'alat HaTorah, which is very hard to read, so let me say it outside. And he expands on this, and he says that it teaches you something else. One is that each person has a unique portion in Torah, right? Meaning it's not just to remind you that you can learn, but to remind you that each person learned Torah, they each have something to contribute. And the reason that actions is so important is because you learned in utero and you weren't able to mimikayim anything. Now, in number 26, and this is a relatively well-known, though if very odd, source, Reb Chaim Volozhin wrote a sefer called the Safra Ditzanusa. And in the Hakdama, and don't ask me to explain what I'm about to say, he says that many times, okay, a little bit of background. There is a book, I think we mentioned this last week or 2 weeks ago, Rabbi Yosef Karo, who wrote the Shulchan Aruch. What other books did he write? Beit Yosef, which is an encyclopedia on the Torah. What else? Kesef Mishnah, which is his commentary on the Rambam. Good. What's his weirdest book? The Magid Meisharim. What's the Magid Meisharim? Correct. It's his chavrusa with his personal malach, the Magid. Right, the Magid likes him a lot. Right, the Magid in the Hakdama says that he asked God, "What do you think about Rabbi Yosef Karo?" And he says,
"Yeah, he's a pretty good guy."
Yosef Hamichune Karo, Pasakna Rabba Daara di Israel. Right, the great posek of Israel, Mechabarna Rabba Daara di Israel. Right, the great author. And goes on, Hasher Melech Malchei Hamlachim Chafetz Bikaro. Right? Which is taken from the Megillah. Right? Hasher Melech, but Melech Malchei Hamlachim Chafetz Bikaro. It's an interesting book. Reb Chaim Volozhin said that apparently the Gra was once offered, or many times offered, Chavruzas with Malachim. Don't ask me what this means. I don't know. And what did the Gra say?
Nah, I'm good.
Exactly. That is exactly what he said. He said, no, I don't want it. Why didn't he want it? Because he said they wanted to be Kashem Shirotim Lemstroilo Razin Dorite Blo Shema Mail. You want to give me the secrets of Torah without effort? Velo Hito is not as slow as Nehem, as no Lehem Klal. He refused to listen to them. Ve'echad min ha-magidim hiftzir bo-mod. One of the angels really pressured the Grah to let him teach him everything. Im kol ze lo hibit el ha-malach ha-gadol. He refused to look at him. Because he said, the mitzvah of Talmud Torah is to learn it yourself. Below shum emtzei klal. So these types of sources, right, these types of sources, what do they emphasize? Not just that there are two aspects to Talmud Torah, but that even this aspect, Yediyata Torah, might
require effort.
Right, might not be valuable unless you got it through effort. If that's the case, is sort of this weird mystical story of the Gra, right, you would say that there's a obligation to avoid any version of this. Now, why would you say that this is different from, let's say, the printing press or things like that?
Because the printing press is just copying it down.
Meaning it's one thing to make things easier, it's another thing to remove all effort. Right? There's no chiyuv to struggle, even though there is a tshuva in Leket Yosher, who's a Talmud of the Trumat HaDeshen, who says that in his Beit Midrash, they once wanted to introduce new technology. They wanted to introduce a swivel table, so that when they needed a book from the other side, they could just...
Why don't I just get up and go get the book?
So that's what the Leket Yosher said. He said, no, I don't want you to make it easier. Right? You have to work for Talmud Torah, swiveling. I have not seen this inside. I haven't seen this inside. I heard this in a shir by Ray Rosner. Yesterday, I was listening to Daf Yomi yesterday in the car, so I meant to look it up, but it's in my head, so I have to look up this Tshuva in the Leket Yosher. But again, that's part of sort of a group of halachic, hashkafic thoughts that point in the direction that maybe Talmud Torah fundamentally requires effort, maybe even extra effort. Right? I mean, you can't make things easier. That, I think, is a bit radical. Right? I don't think we should accept that it's problematic. I mean, what? I'm not allowed to use Bar-Ilan. I have to go down to the National Library to find, you know, a physical copy of this bizarre tshuva from the 1750s, right? I can just pull it up and read it. Then I'll struggle over understanding it.
Are you not allowed to ask a post like a question? Do you have to like learn the entire sugya yourself and decide for yourself? Like,
no, I would definitely be okay with saying, well, not that you shouldn't ask a post, but I'd be totally fine with saying yes. As much as you can, every sugya, go into a question knowledgeable. I'm okay with that. I'll put.
Practicable for the vast majority of people.
Oh, for sure. But the more effort you can put in, the better. But you're right.
You just put infinite, like.
You're right. I have to look this Leket Yosher inside. My feeling is that we should distinguish between effort of access and then the effort of the actual process of learning. Right? Meaning, there's nothing wrong with making it easier to access a book. Like, I know certain people, and I don't understand this, they only want to read the old versions of books that are, like, in small Rashi script and the pages are yellowing.
Oh, like
because,
this.
Yeah, like that. instead of like the one in big font with block ones with footnotes, because it feels more authentic. I don't buy that, right? I think, why shouldn't I make it easier to access the text? The effort, because then you can use all the effort you have on
the actual text,
on the actual understanding of the text. So I don't know what I would say for this tshuva in the Leket Yosher, but
all of our worksheets still have the original text from the books.
What?
So, yeah.
So based on sources like this, you would say that in fact there is a problem with making it too easy to access the information, right? Or taking all effort out. And if you look at 27 as well, he says, "Vanir bazal pi v'ida b'sechet nidash m'lamed kol ha'tera kulo adam b'zman shehu ubar." Right? He comments on this midrash that you learn the whole Torah when you're in utero. He says, "What was the point?" He said he thinks that the point we just made is in fact the point of the Agadata. Right? He says the point, you want to know the point of the, like, the meaning of this Agada? The meaning of the Agada is not the fact that you learned it, it's the fact that you forgot it. Right? Meaning until now we've been saying the meaning is that you remembered it. But he's saying, no. The point was that you, the Agadata was coming to tell you that if you could get to a point where you knew Kol HaTorah Kulo, but it didn't take any effort, that would be a problem. And we would want you to forget it, because we want the Torah that you know to be through through effort. He gets on to afterwards the different ways in which people acquire Torah. If you're Talmidei Chacham by learning it, if you are not someone who's a Talmid Chacham, maybe by supporting Torah. But that's not our our issue for now. So far, what we've seen there for is that, one, there are two aspects to the mitzvah of Torah, learning and knowledge. In theory, you could have said, look, you're never going to be able to replace the value of learning. That's process-oriented by definition. Right? By definition. But this other aspect of knowledge of Torah, so that you could go two ways. Right? One is to say, there's no problem. As long as you're going to take this body of knowledge and learn it, so then it's fine. Right? The other would be to say that no, these actually have to influence each other. Meaning, the fact that part of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah's process teaches you that even the aspect which seems result-oriented must be achieved via a process. And again, my feeling would be, to the extent that that value exists, in terms of knowing effort put in understanding the Torah itself, not things that make it hard, right? Like small texts and swivel tables, right? Like, I can't imagine that that's actually a problem.
If it is, that's an issue.
What?
If it is, that's an issue.
Yeah, I mean, responsa project would be, like, terrible, or the internet, or, you know, why you Torah, or anything, right? You know, it's terrible that you can listen to Torah while you're driving. You should have to go to the shir, right? And sit in traffic for hours to get there. I mean, yes, you should walk. That's right. You should walk to all shirim.
Not everything, but like you should. If the book is on the other side of the table, yes, you can get up and move.
Okay, yeah, of course you can. You can make quantitative distinctions if you want.
That's not a question about like whether or not you can put in the swivel table because of how important Talmud Torah is.
Yeah, I need to find this inside again. I only, like, I heard it for the first time. I remember anyways, last night, and I was like, oh, that's interesting and a little bit strange. Okay, I mentioned some of the sources already on, let's see, how much time do we have? We have a few minutes. Okay, you know, once we're talking about it, so it's just worth throwing out some of the issues here. Right now, in what way should one learn, right, once we're talking about it? So as we already saw, the Gemara in Kiddushin said you should divide up your Torah into thirds. So what does that mean? So, lahalacha, The Bali HaTosfot, based on Rabbi Tam, think that means basically you can learn Gemara all day because Gemara has Psukim in it and it mixes everything together. The Rambam thinks what it means is that at the beginning of your learning, you divide it equally between Tanakh. A third in the text of Mishnah, essentially, which means Sar Shabal Peh, but just the simple ideas, and then a third in analysis. And then, as you get older, and you cover more information, so you devote more and more time to analysis, because you already know the basics, and you set aside periodic times to review the basics, but use most of your time in Talmud Torah on analysis, right? And therefore, sort of this distinction between acquisition of knowledge and analysis, which was one of the other distinctions we talked about, the Rambam basically says it depends on what stage of your learning. Obviously, the earlier stages of learning, when there's still work to be done in terms of accessing and information, so you focus more on learning information. And analysis becomes more important as you go on. I'll skip the issue that I threw out before about Osek b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah, and this distinction, right, between saying that the knowledge that you know, that aspect of the mitzvah is easier to say, look, you can push off until you know a basic core information. That's the Shulchan Aruch Rav's argument. And therefore, it's legitimate for someone to, let's say, I'm going to get married later so that I have time to learn the basics. But obviously, analysis is something that's a lifelong process, which is another part of this. A few other sources just on this value that we sort of we jumped to at the end of Amelut. So if you just look, there's a few Agadic passages here. So look at 13, where the Gemara says that the very purpose of Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdime, Maikra Shneamar Nefesh Amel Amala Lo. What does that mean? So, skipping down. So, Amar Rabbi Lazar called Adam La'amal Nivra. The Gemara in this passage, in Sanhedrin, says that the purpose of human beings is to toil. Shneamar ki Adam La'amal Yulad. Eni Yodim La'amal Pen Nivraim La'amal Melacha Nivra. I don't know what type of amel. Does that mean I have to work? Does that mean my goal in life is what I say? Kishomer ki Akav Alav Pihu Evi Omer La'amal Pen Nivra. So, the Pasuk says that it's something to do with your mouth. The purpose of the world is to be involved in Torah. So these ideas that we talked about at the end, that I'm at a certain level, without effort, things aren't valuable, does seem to bear itself out in certain, again, more agadic statements that emphasize effort. And again, you get this Gemara in Megillah, number 14, where even when explaining, describing Talmud Torah, the Gemara says, "Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, im yomer lach adam yagati v'lo matzati et al tamen." If someone says, "I put in effort and didn't find the Torah," don't believe him. Lo yagati umatzati. If I didn't, but if he said, "I didn't put any effort in and yet I learned," al tamen, don't believe him. Yagati umatzati tamen. But if he said, I put in effort and I found, so believe him. Meaning, definitional to Talmud Torah, according to the Gemara, is you need to put an effort to get. If you got it without effort, or you put an effort and you didn't achieve it, don't believe them. Fundamental to it is effort, and then a certain modicum of success, at least, is guaranteed. The Gemara says that that's only by Hani Mili B'Divrei Torah. Right? That's only by Torah, but not by maso mata, not by business, where a lot of it is luck. But the Gemara then says, but this is only in terms of learning. But he says, in terms of whether or not you remember your learning, that's a gift from heaven. Right? Memory is not something that is easily, it is improvable, but it's not easily improved. So from this Gemara, on the one hand, you see that effort is very central. You also see that at some level, the question of whether you remember it, assuming you're trying, is less important than the fact that you did your best, which again emphasizes the centrality. Now, there are other Gemaras that indicate differently, because the Gemara in Menachot says that there is an Isser D'Oraisa, there's a biblical prohibition to forget Torah, which complicates matters a little bit. Okay, so let's summarize it and wrap it up here. So basically what I think we've seen is that, is there a value to it? Again, this is more of a agadic, halachic, somewhere in between shir, but it was a bit futuristic, so it fit the bill. If I could download Kol HaTorah Kula into my head, would there be a value? So as we said, clearly in terms of the mitzvah of limud, you would still have a mitzvah to learn on a regular basis. That isn't going to go away. Is it going to help you with this value of Yediyat HaTorah? So, there's a few reasons why you might say no. One is that maybe central to Yediyat HaTorah is also analysis. But then you could say, okay, fine, so it doesn't accomplish analysis. But if I can download upload all the information to my brain, and then spend the rest of my life with analysis, is that problematic? So on the one hand, you might have said no, because, look, I'm still spending my time in Talmud Torah. This is no different than printing easy-to-read books and having a responsive project or using the internet. But on the other hand, the more you give stock to these sources that say that without the effort put in, there is no value, the more you'll say, no, this is something that should actively be avoided. Now, I think you could construct another possibility, which is to say that if I go through the process of learning everything myself, but I have a bad memory, and then I can sort of supplement my actually having read everything by uploading it into my brain. So maybe that would be okay, because now you've put in the effort, and as Rashi already said, whether or not you remember things is not usually up to you. But just like there's presumably no problem learning like memory tricks, if I actually went through it with the effort and then I used this technology to bolster my learning instead of reviewing constantly, right? Once I've learned it, I then, upload the file to my brain so that it's there permanently, right? Maybe you could sort of come up with a combined model in which it would be, which we could endorse it. I don't know. These are interesting thoughts to think about. Okay, there's some more sources here, but I think those are the fundamental questions, which, to be fair, in our conversation, even before we looked at the sources, we outlined all the general directions. These are just some sources that point in the direction. Okay, I think we only